And so reading further in the teaching today on the training of the ego, the two sides of the ego, Hazrat Anayat Khan says, "It is the nature of the ego during its period of ignorance that all that is beautiful or powerful and all that is below the standard of its ideal agitates it." This sensitiveness may increase to such an extent that all that does not bring any comfort or joy or happiness to the ego may become repugnant to it. It is the nature of the ego during its period of ignorance that all that is very beautiful or powerful and all that is below the standard of its ideal agitates it. This sensitiveness may increase to such an extent that all that does not bring any comfort or joy or happiness to the ego may become repugnant to it. It's interesting. When we have an attachment in any way, then it really creates quite a problem. If we are desirous that if someone's angry with us, for example, and we just wish so much that they would no longer be angry, well, that's putting a burden upon that person. They're entitled to that feeling. And we can respect that feeling. We can pray that it will evolve and change and come to some sort of balance. But that attachment that we may have to an outcome can also be harmful. I find people sometimes demonstrating in the city for peace, but they're doing it in a very aggressive way. You understand? So, how do we give up those expectations in a way? We can hold the light. We can hold them in our heart. But
we can tell their guardian angel to look up. Work through them.
Yeah. Or we can tell our guardian angel to go talk to their guardian angel.
Right.
Yeah. That's right. So let's do these practices that we do called the elemental breaths, because I think they teach us so much about moving into different states. Moving from a very solid state of earth all the way to the fluid state of water, to the fiery illuminating state of fire, of the air element that gives us space, and the etheric element that is the culmination and dissolution of all elements. And I'd like to talk about this in a different way than we often do, which is often very prescribed on a breath with specific visualizations. But here I'd like to talk about the elements regarding their characteristics and how they correspond to our characteristics. Because by viewing this, we can see those characteristics within ourselves, and we can become master of those elements and utilize them to evolve and to help us get out of places that might be stuck or to move on to the next phase. And while we talk about these characteristics, I think it's very good to also, and I will try to draw your attention to that, because I think it's helpful to see the shadow side of things as well as the light side of things. So an example of that, with the earth element teaches us strength and courage and steadfastness. That's the light of it. The shadow is stubbornness and doggedness. You understand what I'm saying? So we want to always be sure that we're looking at that and we're using that element in a way that can best aid us and support us in our spiritual evolution in our adaptability to our external world, in our harmonization with others, whatever element they may be in. Okay. Any questions before we move into that practice? So the first breath is the element of earth. And that breath is a full breath, but in a rather rhythmic fashion. And here I'm not going to count, because I really think that we're tuned and we'll perhaps, the breath will come into a rhythm with each other. But we're breathing in through the nose, and we're breathing out through the nose. And here we can think or imagine or visualize or feel the earth element in all of its ramifications. And we think to ourselves, what are its properties? What are its attributes? And the earth, we know, is quite solid. It rises up to meet us, and of course, gravity keeps us tethered to it. And if we think about it, when we walk on the earth, that feeling of its solidness beneath us gives us a feeling of certainty, of groundedness, of being met and supported. Its general characteristic is solid in form. And its associative qualities could be considered, again, confidence and steadfastness and stability. So feel that solidness and know that we too are made of the element of earth. It gives us form and it helps us feel solid in some ways. And within our character, it can give us confidence and courage and strength. And we're breathing in the nose and out the nose. Another general quality of earth is that of spreading in a horizontal direction. And so, with that quality, we have a kind of sphere of influence that offers stability and a kind of spreading out motion. Murshid would call that a horizontal direction. And so when we need to have a kind of support, a will, you know, a presence behind our will, this is a good element to offer this support. And likewise, if we find ourselves stuck or really digging our heels in or feeling very stubborn about something, we can be assured that perhaps this element has taken too much control of us. If we absolutely can't change our perspective, our view, perhaps we've gotten stuck in the earth element. Like getting stuck between two rocks. Now the next element becomes more subtle because it's not solid, it's fluid, and this is the element of water. And so the element of water, we breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. We breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. And what this tells us by the very virtue of this breath is that water flows in a downward direction. And we know this. This is a natural principle of water flowing down. Now, water teaches us how to be fluid, how to move around obstacles, how to have progression and movement in one's life. So it's a wonderful element to invoke when we need movement, perhaps when we've gotten stuck in the earth element and become dogged in some ways or dogmatic. We can use the water element to help create movement in our inner culture, within our mind, within our heart. We breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. Now, the other aspect of water is that we hear the term, and again, this is an English term, we call people wishy-washy, where they maybe can't make a commitment or take a stand. In that way, perhaps the water element is out of balance or has taken too much of a hold on someone. And they're too fluid, too perhaps over-emotional. This might be something that could be looked at as the shadow of the water element. And how does one bring that into balance? And the third breath is that we breathe in through the mouth and out through the nose. We breathe in through the mouth and out through the nose. And by virtue of this direction, we learn that the element of fire is arising. It rises. We breathe in through the mouth and out through the nose. This element gives a warmth to one's character. It can illuminate one's path. It can be an element of inspiration. But what's more than inspiration, it is aspiration. It's this reaching upward, perhaps towards an inspired source. We breathe in through the mouth and out through the nose. In through the mouth and out through the nose. The element of fire, light, and warmth. Of course, the great discovery that allowed human beings to evolve was fire. It illuminated the darkness. It provided warmth. It gave a means to transform elements. But we also know that fire is, when out of balance, can be all-consuming. It can be very destructive. And it can create anger that can be misdirected and very harmful. So we want to watch this element too and to feel the presence of it in our being, use it to form our character, but also be mindful if it's coming out of balance in some way. We breathe in through the mouth and out through the nose. Then we have the element of air, and this gives one a sense of spaciousness, of openness, of expandedness. And we breathe in through the mouth and out through the mouth. In this element, Murshid gave the direction as a zigzag, and sometimes the example as a leaf being carried along in the wind or the air. And also one can think of this as a moving in all directions simultaneously, an ever-evolving spaciousness, and a space in which everything can exist. Everything has space and its place. And you can see that things have become more and more subtle. So we're breathing in the mouth and out the mouth. In the mouth and out the mouth. And we've moved from this solid form of earth. You see, earth, we can dig it, we can form it, we can make things out of it. And water, although it's moving, we can contain it. We can put it in a vessel and hold it. Or we can make it cold if it's lacking in the fire element. We can even freeze it into a solid. And then with fire, of course, we can somewhat contain it by putting a shade around it. But if we try to contain it altogether, it puts it out. You see, this is how life is. We can't suffocate things. We can't control things to that extent. Things are alive. They're moving. And air? Well, without air, fire couldn't exist. It needs the air. And the air is, again, this space, this accommodation for all possibilities to exist. And so they say that this is the element of imagination and inspiration. And we have these expressions like, oh, someone just pulled that out of the air. That just came out of the clear blue. We have even these expressions, at least in the English language. But if we're feeling smothered in some way, and we need to feel inspired, and we need to feel clear and open, this is the element. But if we're feeling completely ungrounded, of course, this element is perhaps a bit out of balance. If we can't form our thoughts completely, we can't form our words completely, we can't give form to things in our lives, then this element perhaps has become too dominant. Even in Eastern medicine, if this element is too dominant, it is said that the mind becomes imbalanced. And Murshid said it is the element of mind. The mind can become imbalanced. So we want these elements in their proportions so that they can inform us and that our character, our qualities of the personality can be adorned with these elements like precious jewels. We're breathing in the mouth and out the mouth in a rather rhythmic, balanced way. And the last breath is the etheric breath. And this breath returns to a breathing in and out the nose, but in a very subtle way. It is as if it's a breath within the breath. It's the core of the most subtle breath. It is that breath that is almost as if it's the big bang in a very subtle way. It's as if all the elements are moving out from that breath and all those elements are absorbed back into that breath. So in one sense it's creation, and in another sense it's the dissolution. It's the birth. It's the death. It's the endless cycle of things. And in this breath, there's a kind of stillness, very subtle qualities. Breathing in the nose and out the nose. Amen. And may I ask, are there any questions regarding this practice or any comments? And we can think of the influence that the elements have upon each other as they go up the elemental scale and back down. And we can think about that transition from earth, the solidity, to water, the fluidity. And even when they're mixed together, what happens? We get this balm, this salve, that's used in native traditions to heal. Water with earth is very healing. And when we add we move from the water element to the fire element, we can use water and fire together to transform that element, to heat it, to give warmth, to purify again. And again, fire is contingent upon having air. If it has no air, the flame is completely snuffed out. And so all these elements, there's an interplay all around us at every moment. Yes.
It may be why Burberry, the khaki color raincoats, are successful on rainy days, because earth, brown, beige, absorbs water.
Yeah.
And they
gotta yes, they do. Yes, they do. Any other comments? And please take to heart this aspect of when that element becomes too dominant or out of balance, what can happen within ourselves. Again, the earth element can create a hardness within us if it's out of balance, kind of doggedness or stubbornness. The water element can make us over-emotional. It can make us indecisive. Okay. It can also, it can also create an aspect in us that avoids conflict. But you know, conflict is sometimes the element that allows change to occur and growth to occur. So the avoidance of that maybe is, although desirable to create harmony, sometimes is unavoidable to create change. And again, it's our perspective of that that creates fear or reluctance. There's another word, but it'll come. And the fire element, of course, can give us a warmth and a light to our character, but it can also make us, it can be too much and it can make people feel afraid. So we have to balance that.
For instance, if it's April 9th, just the number 9 is a fiery number.
Yeah.
So you're very versed in the color fire, whereas I have the color water on, so I really must cause a lot of turbulence wearing this around.
I don't think so. Your smile can...
Something red, maybe.
Then the element, and again, the element of fire is something to be monitored. We know that that can be a very intense element. And air can create indecision, a lack of commitment, confusion, if it's out of balance. So we want to think about that and use the elements as our agents for refinement, for mastery, for change if necessary. Are there any other comments? Use these practices. Everyone that's working with me on the spiritual path knows this, and this should be part of the daily life, daily practice. It makes a difference. And one may not know it. It's like they say, realization happens in a moment after 20 years of practice or 5 years of practice or 10 minutes of practice or whatever that is, but it takes effort and it takes time. We have that through many examples of wise beings. Shall I move on? So again, on the same teaching, the training of the ego, the two sides of the human ego. And I'll read the previous statement because it ties into this one. Murshid Hazrat Naik Khan says, "It is the nature of ego during its period of ignorance that all that is beautiful or powerful and all that is below the standard of its ideal agitates it. This sensitiveness may increase to such an extent that does not bring comfort or joy or happiness to the ego may become repugnant to it. It is this ignorant state of the ego, which in the Sanskrit language is called by the wise Amkara. And the whole method that the wise have taught in any age and in any part of the world has been for recognizing and understanding this ignorance, which is the primary nature of the ego, and then for purifying one's ego from this by gentleness, by humility, by self-control, by tolerance, and by forgiveness. It is this ignorant stage of the ego, which in the Sanskrit language is called by the wise Amkara, and the whole method that the wise have taught in any age and in any part of the world has been for recognizing and understanding this ignorance, which is the primary nature of the ego, and then for purifying one's ego from this by gentleness, humility, by self-control, by tolerance, and by forgiveness. I can remember years ago taking a retreat. It was when I first met my first initiator and guide, Murshida Vira. And as part of a retreat on the inner child and healing things that may need to have been healed from the past, she gave a series of practices. These I've also given in another workshop on divine forgiveness. And these practices are Ghafur, G-H-A-F-I-R, Ghafur, we'll say. And this is called, these attributes are, it veils our faults from the eyes of others. You know, sometimes we need to be protected and we don't want to be so vulnerable. And we know our faults often very well. We don't necessarily need other people to point them out to us. So this is the aspect that veils our faults from others.
Magic?
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like they use in the cars to those things that veil you from the police. What do they call? And I always think about the little force field that can come up. This week I had to take Leo to campus, and we all know Leo's not a little dog, but it was there was a circumstance that prevailed, and he had to go with me to work. So I told Leo, and we had to walk from, you know, quite a distance to get to our building. So I was talking to him while we were in the car. Leo, of course, is the dog for those people that don't know. And I said, "Now, Leo, we have to put up our magic force field and be invisible." So we were very stealth getting in and out of the building.
That's exactly what I did with a pet skunk I had through the radar of Kansas City MCI to New York.
Wow.
But this was like 10 or 15 years
ago. Yeah, well, now it's such a different world.
I told Framboise, her name, sorry, I said, "Framboise, just be quiet and be good and we'll do it."
And you got through.
Blankets and everything.
Woohoo! There you go. Yeah. Anything's possible.
Has she been fixed?
No, I respect her integrity. I loved her. I wanted her to be happy. In New York, we went to a Black Tie benefit of some sort, and there was a dog, and she got scared with a dog, so she did spray a tiny bit then.
Whoa. But
we got out of there quickly.
Yeah, I bet you did. Ran for your life and for hers too.
The Tiffany elevator lady who ran the elevators said, "Hi, Framboise," and she'd walk in on my shoulder, and we'd walk along Fifth Avenue, and she would be free walking on her own volition.
Aww.
You'd see crowds turning their head, looking at that skunk following.
Well, I know when we've done retreats at Llama Foundation, there are a lot of skunks. I mean, there's a lot of wildlife anyway in the mountains. Kurimagita probably remembers this. And at night, I mean, they're rather pretty nocturnal, so they like to come out at night. And so they like to frequent the sort of the kitchen area and where people gathered for eating. And there were a lot of them, and they would come out, and you know, we all just kind of stayed cool, and they did too. They were kind of like cats.
They're lovable.
Yeah, very, very easy to be around, but you know, we didn't bother them and just let them be. And did you have another kind of experience? You're laughing.
No,
you should write a short story about that.
I was thinking of Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah, Pepe Le Pew. Ooh, the little cartoon. That's our telephone, by the way, for those that might,
good.
You know, either that or the heavenly spheres that have decided to serenade us. Okay. So, Ghafur, the aspect of forgiveness, divine forgiveness, that veils the faults from others. Okay. Ghafur, which is Ghafur, is that aspect that keeps the knowledge of our faults from even the angels. Okay. And this is a very important one. The last one is Ghafar, like far away, F-F-A-R, G-H-A-F-F-A-R. And this is the one that relieves us from the suffering of our own continual remembrance of our faults. You know, those quiet voices that can beat ourselves up about things. So that's Ghafar. So Ghafur, Ghafur, Ghafar. Ghafur, Ghafar. Okay? So again, the first one is that aspect that protects us from the view, these faults from the view of others. The other is more subtle, protects us from the view of the other realms, the subtle realms, protects us from that view, from the angelic realms, from the subtle realms. And Ghafar is that which protects us from ourselves, that doesn't allow us to move forward because we are always continually maybe berating ourselves about our own faults. And we can't evolve. It's like spinning our wheels in the mud. We can't get out of it. And so we have to find a way to overcome that, and this practice can do this. So the practice is done as a series. Frequently, Wazifa practice is done independent, one, and then you move to the next one and the next one. But this one is done together in a series. So Ghafur, Ghafur, Ghafar. And when we do Wazifa, we begin the first series with the prefix of Ya. We could call that an honorific way of addressing these divine attributes. So it's like, oh dear, precious forgiveness, Ghafur, the one that conceals my faults, that veils me, that protects me. So that's Ghafur. Ghafur is the one that protects me even from the realization of the illuminated beings, the enlightened ones, that they also don't see my faults, so that I'm veiled and protected. And then Ghafar is the one that protects that fault even from my own eyes, so that I'm not berating myself and limiting myself according to the view of my faults. You understand?
Is that repressed guilt?
It could be repressed guilt.
Okay.
Or anger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or unresolved things that keep getting projected again and again so that we can't move on. And I do believe that we do that. I mean, certainly I'm not a psychologist, but from a psychological point of view, it's known that that's done, that we continue to project things externally so that we can see them again and again. And we may even set up scenarios so that we are attempting to learn the same lesson again and again. But unless we strive for a different outcome, it will just become a tireless perpetuation of the same suffering. And so this practice can help. You know, they've done these studies on people that are in abusive relationships. Often come from households that are abusive. And then they are drawn to other people that are abusive or abusive situations. And it's very subtle. It's almost like a radar that draws that, or that scenario emerges again and again. And from a psychological point of view, it's a perpetuation of that same cycle. But the hope is always there that the outcome will change. But it is a form of mental illness when you think about it, that keeps perpetuating it without creating a different outcome. We have to strive for that outcome, and that may be working with a good friend, a spiritual mentor, but the psychological aspect. You know, Pir Vilayat, when I was with him and representing him in the Sufi order, he always said, you have to do the psychological piece. You cannot just use spirituality as a bypass. He would caution people not to use the spiritual bypass. That's what he called it. Because those, and he always said too, he quoted Carl Jung by saying, if you don't deal with the shadow of yourself, it will return to you as your fate. If you don't deal with the shadow, it will return to you as your fate. And we can see that, how people will give a pretense, and of course, we're trying to overcome all pretense to be natural, to be honest, to be truthful, to not manipulate the world as we want it. But the idea of pretense, we've seen this, we hear it in the news. That person was a wonderful person. The appearance was, the pretense was, they were a church-going, family-loving, God-fearing person, and then they become the worst of the worst of a, you know.
The real, not the real, but the...
The shadow. Fear. The shadow comes out, and it is manifest. And so here's the story, folks. We all have that potential to be an absolute devil. And we all have the potential to be an angel. And it is our will with the grace of God that is the difference. We have to will things to happen. We have to use our human will along with the attunement to our purpose and the divine, whatever you want to call that, divine. That's it.
Is it the ego that's the devil part?
Yes.
I think the ego, you know, we've heard Murshid Hidayat say many times, we're not trying to get rid of the ego. The ego isn't the enemy. But the ego out of balance can be the enemy. We're trying to refine the ego in servitude to the divine. And there's a wonderful story, of course, of the, you know, they call him the monkey king, Hanuman, who was in servitude to Rama, and he always, you know, he was supposed to be a monkey representing the lower nature of oneself. But you see him in pictures in India, and he's going like this with his chest, and inside is his god, Rama. And so it's like, I'm serving this divine being. And so the ego can do that too. I mean, the ego isn't bad. It's the very thing that tells us, you know, to get out of the way of a big truck coming towards us, to bathe ourselves, to feed ourselves, to find shelter, to, you know, protect from harm. But it's also can be out of, it can also be out of balance and want to control everything. And we want to be more refined than that. And that's
what, from the personality
I think the personality is something that is can embrace all of those things. It could be part, it can be spirit, it can be material, but the personality gets formed, and I think the ego too, I mean maybe those could be synonymous, gets formed around the conditions of the life. And here we're trying to develop these papers could be called also dealing with character building or the refinement of the personality. Murshid Anayat Khan says that we're seeking the democracy of the personality and the nobility or the aristocracy of the soul. So that democratic aspect of sort of discernment, of being able to assess if something is, well, and that's a good, probably a good assessment tool. Is it harmful? If something's harmful, then it is unwholesome. And according to some traditions, one might call that an aspect of evil. But if it is helpful, if it's beneficial, then one could say it's wholesome. And again, these terms, you know, heaven, hell, devil, angel, I mean, that's all relative. And ultimately, they're conditions of, I believe, they're conditions of the mind in some regard. But it's very subtle. And we know that people, we've seen it in history, that people can justify real atrocities and feel justified in that. And God willing, we all have good friends or family people that can tell us when, if we can't see for ourselves, if we're not clear enough, that they can say, wait a minute, something's not right here. I think the personality continually needs to be rarefied, or we're making assessments based on a construct, which I think the personality is. So let's do first the wazifas independently, and then we'll do them as a group, okay?
How do you spell wazifa?
W-A-Z-I-F-A. Sometimes you see it S instead of Z. So the first aspect is ghafur. This is the aspect that is putting a veil around us so that our faults are not seen by others. Ya ghafur, 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 ya ghafur. Ya Ghafur, last time, Ya Ghafur. Now we just whisper, Ghafur, 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 Ghafur. Silently, feeling that protection, veiling of one's faults. And now we move on to the next wazifa. And this is ghafur, ghafur, excuse me, ghafur, ghafur, ghafur. And ghafur is that aspect that is even more subtle, that shroud, that veiling becomes even less penetrable. And it is the one that protects our faults even from the realms of the angels and the holy ones. It gives us permission to reside in those realms. You know, if we feel unworthy, then we can't even invoke the name of God. We can't feel that divine presence. We feel unworthy to participate in that divine inheritance. But this allows for protection so that we can enter that sacred place. Yaga for. Last time, yaga for. Now whisper. Now silently. Again, at least in the way I offer to you and share together in this group and also with students, I always prescribe saying the wazifa aloud, preceded by ya for the first set. Think of it, it's setting up that vibration, that audible vibration within one's body, within the atmosphere. Then we no longer to use the ya, we just say the word more subtly. Heal my body, heart, it gets more subtle. You know, it's like singing to a baby. At first you're singing aloud, and then it gets more and more silent, and then it's just then all together, it's just in that union of vibration. You understand? The very beautiful process. So first you're setting up the vibration in your body, saying it aloud. Then you're whispering. It becomes much more intimate. We penetrate the body, we enter into the heart realm. And then all together, there's no need for the word. We just sense the vibration and repeat it silently inward. The soul. It's like speaking to the soul. Soul doesn't need words. Soul doesn't need words. You understand? So now we'll do the last wazifa, which is gafar, far, and that is the aspect of the faults are even concealed from ourselves so that we can move on and we don't perpetuate this limiting thought of oneself. Okay, so remember these three cycles and think about it, that you're speaking to, first you're setting up the vibration in the atmosphere in your body, then it becomes more subtle. You're speaking to your heart, then the language of the soul is pure vibration. Okay, more and more subtle, like singing to a baby. Okay? So again, the next one is Ghafar, and this is the one that protects us even from ourselves. Ya Ghafar, 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 Ya Ghafar. Yagafar. Now we will take all three wazifas and we will say them together. Again, in a cycle of three, invoking these aspects of forgiveness that allows us to heal those wounds, to cover up the wound long enough to allow it to heal. You see, it's sometimes we just keep digging at the same thing. And you remember that when you were a little kid and you had a little sore or boo-boo from having fallen, and your parents would say, don't pick at that scab, let it heal. It will naturally fall off, you see. In some ways, it's this way with life. We keep wanting to dig at things, but sometimes if we let it be, it will resolve itself. It's also the ego that wants to know everything immediately, to have a quick answer, to have a quick resolution. Every season has its turn. Things take time sometimes. Yagafor, Yagafor, Yagafor. Yaga Fur, Yaga Fur, Yaga Far. Yaga Fur, Yaga Fur, Yaga Far. Yaga Fur, Yaga Fur, Yaga Far. Harmonize. Yaga Fur, Yaga Far. Yaga far, Yaga fur, Yaga far, Yaga far, Yaga fur, Yaga far, Yaga far, Yaga fur, Yaga far, Yaga far. Yaga fur, Yaga fur, Yaga far. Yaga fur, Yaga fur, Yaga far. Last time. Yaga fur, Yaga fur, Yaga far. And whisper, and we drop the yah.